Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Mary Izette, your solo, well, not quite, your solo official host for the evening. I am joined by a special co-host, Bahia
Kamo.
Yes, I tell you, I cannot, my Midwest tongue is not capable of pronouncing certain letters in that order.
Totally okay.
Anyway, we're a weekly show broadcasting every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on heritageradionetwork.org. We're also archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on the website, heritageradionetwork.org. All right, so I have a couple of announcements to make. I actually wrote a whole announcement list this time. Okay, first up is this coming Saturday. I'm going to do a couple of New York City announcements and then just a general national homebrew announcement. So this Saturday in Brooklyn, Gowanus neighborhood of Brooklyn at the new Threes Brewing is Saison Day. I have brewed a Saison. It's done in conjunction with Allagash Brewing Company, who will be debuting one of their new Saison. They've invited eight local homebrewers to brew Saisons, and then Threes Brewing is going to have a lot of Saison on tap as well. So the event is free. If you're in the neighborhood and you're free this Saturday, please come by. I'll be pouring my Saison, half of which is dry hopped with Mosaic and half of which is has passion fruit.
So sounds very good.
I'm kind of excited. I kind of think I'm going to keg them separately, and then I think they'll be like, I'm going to do some mixes too, because I think they'll work really well.
I think they'll
together.
Work really well. Yeah. I like the Mosaic hops. That was what I used. I did a single hop Mosaic beer for the National Homebrewers Conference. So
yeah. And that's exactly what mine. Well, no, actually, that's not true. Bittering hops were Strissel spelt, but
whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to be joined by a bunch of homebrewers. I'm sure Threes Brewing is going to have a lot of great beers on, and I'm super excited to taste the new Allagash beer as well. And then on Sunday is the Ferment Festival, which we're going to get back to in just a second. So more on that. And then the following weekend is the National Homebrewers First Round, the American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition First Round in New York City. Now, they do these first round judging all over the country, from Austin to Chicago, Nashville, etc. But ours is coming up on March 27th through 29th that weekend. And then a bunch of them will follow. So if you are a beer judge or interested in learning more and would like to offer your help, please do so. You can find out more on the Homebrewers Association website. It's homebrewersassociation.org. And especially if you are a judge or, like I said, interested, you want to come help out, you can help out by stewarding or volunteering in other ways, I would invite you to do so. So again, go to homebrewersassociation.org to find out more. We're going to be holding the first round judging at Single Cut Brewing in Queens. So it's good, great location. All right, I have one more. Also that same weekend, so the Saturday of that weekend, Bitter and Esters is hosting author Michael Tonsmere, who wrote the Sour Beers book. So that's going to be an awesome visit. If you're not judging with us, I would invite you to go head over to Bitter and Esters, and you can find more out on their website. Okay, so this is Chris's second week in Australia. He'll be back next Monday. He's having a really good time. He did some kind of Australian beer show this morning, which was last night, Australian time. I was tempted to get up at 5 a.m. and Skype in, but it did not happen. I'll confess, it's too early for a Monday morning. Anyway, so he'll be back next week. But I am super excited about tonight's guest. Well, both my special co-host and tonight's guest. So we have Zachary Shulman, founder of the Ferment Festival here in Brooklyn, New York.
Hello.
Welcome. I'm so excited. We've been wanting to have you on for probably since we started this podcast.
I didn't realize you didn't have him on last year.
I know there's kind of a list of people that were like, we want to have him on. And then, I don't know, something happens. But that's why I'm so excited.
It's good to have a full schedule.
Yes. Anyway, so let's talk about, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, Zach?
Sure. So I am an amateur fermenter. I'm a fermentation enthusiast. I live in Brooklyn. I love to bike. I love to compost. I love to cook. Nothing unusual. And I really want to kind of spread the gospel of fermentation, and really on the home scale as much as possible, not to the exclusion of professional fermenters, but really to get everyday home cooks or everyday home eaters excited about fermented food and fermented drinks. And that was really kind of the main impetus for the party, for the event.
Awesome. So let's go back to what got you interested in fermenting?
I've always loved to cook and I've always loved to eat tremendously. I mean, I've been cooking since I was probably 4 years old.
Awesome.
And I've been cooking, you know, I'd been cooking for so long, and then I'd always been intimidated by fermentation. I'd seen recipes and I'd heard, you know, just was kind of familiar with it generally, but the idea of this added element of time and this added element of a culture, whether wild or cultivated in some way, was intimidating to me. And I saw fermentation as almost like this next step that was a little bit beyond me. But I ran into a zine truck at a demonstration outside of Washington, D.C., I think in my senior year of college. And I came across this little zine called Wild Fermentation, A Guide to Cultural Manipulation. And I was certainly excited by the wordplay in the subtitle, but it was really the content that pulled me in. It was a zine by Sandra Katz, who went on to write the full book version of that zine.
And then another, even bigger and better.
Yeah, to tremendous acclaim and respect. And so I saw this little zine and I was like, oh, this is cool. And so I started experimenting with cheese in my basement. And it was mostly fresh cheeses and it wasn't anything particularly exciting, but it kind of like, it was a little bit of a kick, and it was a little bit of a confidence booster. It's like, oh, okay, I can play around with this. I can do this. And I had baked bread in the past with commercial yeast, but it was never something that, and I had fermented or I had helped as part of a home brewers club in college, but I didn't really like engage myself with it. It was sort of a bit more passive and it wasn't, it was more about the social aspect or about the eating or drinking aspect than anything else at the time. But I was excited about the zine. I started experimenting. And then a little while later, I heard that he had a full on book coming out, had Wild Fermentation coming out. And he was visiting a community garden that I was working in the South Bronx at the time, because he was friends with a guy that I was working with in the garden. And so that,
and he used to, he lived in New York City for a long time.
He lived in New York City. He's from here originally. And so that kind of just like got me more excited about the book. Is like, oh, this person is real and that's writing all this. And so I got a copy of the book and I browsed through it, and it was still a bit intimidating. And so I went for the recipe that had the simplest process and the simplest equipment and could be done relatively quickly. And it was sauerkraut. I mean, it's like the gateway ferment for many people.
Well, if you started with cheese, come on.
Yeah. Sauerkraut. You didn't start with the easiest one.
So I took a step back and in the kind of heat of probably July or August, you know, high summer in my parents' house, where I was living at the time, I chopped up some green cabbage and mixed it with salt and packed it into a bowl, which I was using as a crock, and put a weight on top of it. And the next day I smelled it and it was sauerkraut. There was no doubt in my mind that I had fermented it. It was still very crunchy and mild and fresh, but I knew that it was on the right track, and I was hooked right from there, from that moment.
Awesome. All right, so let's talk about Ferment for Med. I kind of want to give a little bit of our impressions, and then we'll talk about how it started.
Yeah.
So I'd heard, what year is Ferment for Med this year?
This is the eighth year of the event.
So I had heard about it several years ago. So if we have regular listeners, most of you know that I came from a home brewing background. So I tried other fermentations, like I fermented soda, and I've done some other food fermentations, but really home brewing since pretty hardcore since 2006. but I really hadn't fermented. I mean, I've made bread, but I really didn't get into all-out fermentation until a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I think more and more homebrewers are, you know, there's more kind
crossover,
of
crossover. Yeah,
yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I had heard about Ferment, and then finally was able to go 2 years ago, and I was just blown away. It was amazing. So, you know, I walked in. It's in the Brooklyn Free School in Fort Greene, right? Or Crown Heights.
Clinton Hill.
And I walked in, and there's these long tables, and there's just every fermentation imaginable, from sauerkraut to kimchi to lettuce kvass to, you know,
just
everything.
Beverages, vegetables, dairy, grains, really covers anything you could ferment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just astounding. So when did you first start going, Bahia?
3 or 4 years ago.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You led a workshop.
I led a workshop the first year that
With
I went.
That great little hand-drawn.
Well, I have my hand-drawn sauerkraut pivots, but the first workshop I did was actually on, I think I did a workshop on beer yeast and, like, yeast starters and different ways to, like, have healthy yeast for fermenting beer. So it wasn't quite just, like, introductory to beer. It was, like, a little bit more for people who had been doing it and wanted to, like, learn something a little extra. And I was really just blown away by how many people were really excited to be taking the workshop. And I've been fermenting vegetables and other things for many years, and another mutual friend of Zach and I had been trying to introduce us for a long time, and then kind of finally happened that I made it to Ferment, and we actually got to talk.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what inspired this? You kind of hinted a little bit that you wanted to kind of inspire people to ferment, but what was really the spark 8 years ago?
I mean, I would say as much as inspiration, it was just pure thrill and excitement about fermentation. The first time I held the event, it didn't really have a name. It was in my living room. There were 12 other people. It was really impromptu. And it was, you know, just come over and bring some pickles and let's eat them and eat fermented foods. And it wasn't necessarily homemade fermented food focused. And then I probably missed a year in there somewhere, and really kind of brought the whole idea together of like, you know, a focus on homemade ferments and kind of wanting to share my love for fermentation with just, you know, encouraging others to do it and kind of experiment with all sorts of ferments out there, just finding the fermentation that clicks for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been my experience. I mean, first of all, I've had a lot of fermented foods there that I've never, like lettuce kvass.
Sure, yeah.
Or, you know, there were a lot of cashew cheeses.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely tried a lot of things there that I just, like, never would have thought to do myself and probably wouldn't have come across if I hadn't had the opportunity to try them there.
Yeah.
And I think, like, having, there's always a table to kind of do a culture share for, like, kombucha scobies and starters and stuff like that. And I think that that's really great, too, because it just connects people, you know, with those things, which a lot of people may want to make kombucha, but just don't know where to get a SCOBY, especially like 8 years ago. You know, now there's companies and stuff that make these things and give them out. But a long time ago, just like at the grocery store that I worked at, I would have people come in just asking where to get SCOBYs. And I started just brewing kombucha to stack up SCOBYs so that I could give them
out. Great.
And that was what started me making like the little like hand-drawn pamphlets because I didn't want to just give the people like this pint of mature kombucha and this SCOBY and have them not do anything with it because they read a bunch of stuff on the internet and got confused and got intimidated. So I wanted to like set them up with everything they needed to actually like use it and get into it.
Yeah, kind of like the tipping point for, you know, mm-hmm. for doing kombucha.
Yeah, and I had an interesting experience doing that because people would be like, oh, well, can I pay you for it? And I'd be like, no, like from my understanding, kombucha, you know, it multiplies by itself. So it's just meant to be shared. And I got really interesting gifts in return when I would tell people that. And like I had someone came and brought me a couple days later, like a handmade pot because they were a potter and just like got really interesting stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is a really cool experience. Like, you know, it's nice to just see that like people are interested. And if you like give them just like that little thing to start them, which is why I think Ferment is such a great event for getting people just inspired to get into it or just experience, you know, a type of food that they may not otherwise come across.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Zach and Bahia, more on Ferment, and then we're going to geek out on what we were doing fermentation-wise. So stay tuned.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm in the studio tonight with Zach Schulman and my special co-host, Bahia Kamo.
Kamo.
I don't know. Something about my... Anyway. And we're talking about Ferment for Men, which is a free fermentation festival that's held in Brooklyn every year that Zach Schulman started 8 years ago. It's coming up this Sunday night at the Brooklyn Free School in Clinton Hill. From 4 to 9, right?
4 to 8 p.m.
Awesome.
That's right.
So the all the details of the event are at fermentferment.wordpress.com. You can get all the details on the address. The time is from 4 to 8 p.m. Again, that's fermentferment.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And let's talk about, so you have, this year, I know there were workshops last year because I went to some of them, but I feel like you have more workshops this year than ever. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, we have 5 workshops this year.
And it's a really interesting lineup. Yes. You got like really unique stuff. I was like, oh man, I want to go to all of these.
Me
I'm
too.
Curious about all of this stuff.
So let's go over, well, first of all, how do you recruit for your workshops? And then let's talk about the workshop schedule too.
Sure. So most of the recruitment that I've done is through friends of friends and colleagues and kind of my existing network, whether it's people who have come to the festival in the past or people I've met through New York City Ferments, which is a meetup group that came out of the fermentation party. And what I'm going to be trying to do more of in the future with, you know, Ferment, you know, hopefully next year and any events I'm involved with is make a special effort to recruit people whose history and culture is more connected with the ferments that they are teaching about.
Awesome,
I think that's
yeah.
really important in terms of kind of avoiding issues around cultural appropriation and really respecting the human cultures as you know, certainly the microbial cultures, but the human cultures that these ferments are coming from.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about
Sure.
So what have you got lined up for Sunday?
Sure, we've got a great lineup. To start us off, we have a workshop on amazake, which is a traditional Japanese rice drink. Nukazuke, which are Japanese rice brand pickles. We have a kind of beginner and intermediate workshop on wild vegetable fermentation. That's going to be the longest workshop. That one's going to run 60 minutes. Most of the others are quite a bit shorter, between 20 and 30
and
minutes.
And who's teaching that one?
Wild vegetable fermentation is with Tara Witsit.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Fermentation on Wheels.
Which I interviewed for the show last year and is a long, you know, oh man, great.
Yeah.
She did the workshop at the Bitter and Esters Fermentation Festival, which you also did a workshop there.
Yeah.
And she like had her boss and...
Yeah, and her bus, which is a big part of what she does, is kind of the backbone of her teaching and her kind of culture sharing. Yeah.
And is she going to have that at Ferment?
Yeah, the bus will
great.
Be parked outside the school, which is a huge development this year, and it's super exciting. You know, she was just about to leave town. I think she moved her departure date one day back so that she could be there for the event. So that's exciting so people can be there for the party, and then also check out the bus.
Yeah. And that's going to be great farewell for her. Cause I know she's been in New York City for a little bit. So
yeah,
yeah, she's been here all winter.
It's very appropriate farewell, I think.
Yeah,
anyway. Yeah, right, it's a good setup. Yeah, and then the fourth workshop, Mary, you will be leading Sassy Short Meads.
Yep.
And the fifth, rounding us out, is it's called International Breads: How to Make Idlis and Dosas.
Which, all those workshops are super exciting.
I wish I could go to them. I mean, that's my biggest disappointment of the event every year is that I can't go to the work. I can't make it work for myself.
Yeah. I might have to maybe record them or something. I don't know.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
I bet there's somebody in the community that has that's what they do, and they would love to like offer that service to get it out there.
Yeah. If anyone out there, let me know.
So what do you most look forward to?
A big part of it is connecting with people, meeting new people who are excited to ferment. When people tell me, I was intimidated and then so-and-so gave me a culture or a starter or a bug, or I read this recipe and I'm trying this thing for the first time, and then they bring it and it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
That's thrilling to me. There's that. And then there's also connecting with old friends that I've made through the world of fermentation, or who I've grown closer with because of fermentation, and then just trying everything.
Yeah.
That's kind of the second most challenging part of the evening, is trying to sample every single ferment, which I have not been able to do the last couple of years.
Yeah. And I want to just kind of, for those of you out there, kind of give you a mental picture of this. So again, it's the Brooklyn Free School. So we're kind of in a large room.
It's just a big open room.
Yeah. And you have tables set up on both sides of the room, and then they're divided. So kind of all the like fermented milks are in one place, fermented veggies are in one place, alcoholic drinks are in one place, and so on. So that it's really, that also I think makes it really interesting, because you get to do, like, there's always people bring a lot of sauerkrauts. And I think there was a lot of kimchi's too.
Yeah.
But it's very cool because each one is so unique. And it's really interesting to be able to try them, side by side.
Yeah.
And then, get to talk to the person that made it.
Yeah, I encourage people to label what they've made, but also include their name, so that if someone's excited or curious about something, they can find them, or try and find them at least at the party and find out more. And another big piece of it is that, or another way to kind of describe it, is that it's party meets informal tasting meets potluck. It's super participatory.
Mm-hmm.
That I really encourage and ask everyone to bring something that they've made or contributed to making, to share, even if they don't think it tastes good. As long as you don't think it's going to kill anyone, bring it, share it, and there will be people there to give you feedback, and you'll be able to learn more about it.
Absolutely. So what do you recommend if somebody is interested in coming to this? Obviously, they can go to the website. You also have a Facebook page.
Yes, yep.
And what do they need to do if they want to come?
Try and bring a homemade fermented food or drink. If you have something ready that's been hanging out in the back of your fridge for a while and it's still edible, bring it. If you want to make something super quick, you could throw together a yeasted bread. It could be a wild sourdough, or it could be a commercial yeast. You could make yogurt overnight. You could make sour cream in about a day. You could certainly make a quick
cultured butter.
You could make a quick kimchi or a relatively young sauerkraut. There are so many ferments that you can make between now and Sunday that would be ready and delicious.
And part of the thing that you've been putting up, like I think on the Facebook and on the WordPress, is you have suggestions of different ferments. So if people, can't remember all of this, they can go and look, and there's ideas. And I think you have
there are a few
recipes just to get people started.
And I'm open to guest contributors. If people have super simple, low kind of equipment needs, recipes that they want to contribute that will encourage others to ferment more, let me know. Let me know through the blog or through the Facebook page.
And if you don't have time to make something and are just really curious and want to see what all of this is about, it's still okay to come and just try some stuff and maybe get inspired, so that next year you can come and bring something cool that you were inspired to make.
Yeah. Absolutely. Come check it out. Come, and chat with people there and make something work. And, I also tell people, bring a culture to swap. Maybe you didn't have time to make another batch of kombucha, but you have a kombucha mother, kombucha SCOBY hanging out in your fridge. Bring that to swap. That's great too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, this is a free event, but you do take donations to cover costs. So
absolutely. Yeah. We do have to rent the space.
Yeah.
And so, we encourage everybody to contribute in some way.
But I definitely think I mean, it's so inspirational. I mean, like we're talking about, there's a lots of quick ferments that that you can do between now and then. But also, if people are really interested in fermenting and don't have any experience, then it's a great, overwhelming introduction. But you will definitely be inspired and go home, you know, and want to ferment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell people, if you make something and it totally fails and it's just undrinkable, you cannot eat it, bring the story, you know, bring and share that story.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So let's talk about what you guys are going to bring.
I will probably bring... I actually have not been fermenting very much. I was unexpectedly out of town for about 6 weeks, which I put a lot of things on hold. And I was saying earlier to Zach that I luckily just happened to, you know, feed my sourdough and put it in the fridge and, like, take care of all of my cultures so that when I got back, they were all just fine and had just been kind of dormant. And so I've been really back into baking bread in the past 2 weeks that I've been back. And I have a lot of hot sauces that I had aging because they're like a longer aging thing. So yeah, I'll have a couple of hot sauces, probably not as many as last year. And probably some bread, probably no beer this round because of all of that's kind of, I have to save it for a wedding that I'm brewing for in a little bit. But yeah, I've been really getting into the sourdough bread, which was kind of like something I'd focused on last year. And I feel like this year actually really like, just kind of hit this point where I was like, oh yeah, this clicks, like this, I like have the whole process down, my like I'm really happy with my culture, and yeah, so I'm excited about that.
Looking forward to trying those.
Yeah
I have two different types of ferments going right now that are basically ready. I have a few cheeses and I have a few misos.
Awesome.
So for a while
I that just reminds me, I have a miso that I made in my fridge. I'm definitely gonna bring that.
Ooh, what type?
It's a soy miso, I think. I actually did it with a class that I took with Angela Davis.
Okay.
Or she was one of the students.
Through New York City Ferments?
Yeah, that she put together. Up. Yeah.
Great, great.
And it was at the... I'm totally blanking on the place. But we took it in Williamsburg. But.
Okay. Yeah, so I have three misos. One, they're all sweet misos. And one of them is a soybean miso.
The sweet misos are the quicker ones,
yeah, they're
correct?
Quick, yeah. They're young, they're not as salty.
Yep.
They're super easy. They all aged about a month in my kitchen, just
wow.
Sitting on top of my fridge. One is a soybean. One is a sunflower seed miso, which I think turned out fantastically. I love it. I will definitely make that again. And the third is a little bit more experimental. It's a straight rice miso. So it's kind of like a salty amazake. It's got like some funky flavors going on. It might do better in like a dressing or sauce than straight. And then I made a few cheeses, which is part of a kind of way that I make cheese that I've been doing for a while. It started with me just forgetting about feta cheeses in my fridge for months and then reopening the wax paper and finding that they had soft ripened into something delicious. And so now I buy them and tend to kind of rub the rind of another delicious soft ripened cheese on them to encourage them to go in a certain direction, then throw them back in my fridge and forget about them for a few months. And that's what I have right now. So I have a few of those.
Awesome. So I want to know, what's the difference between a sweet miso, like the sweet fast miso, and a traditional miso?
They're two different styles, the sweet, and then I guess it's the salty. I'm not sure the proper name for it.
A lot of them you'll see, they'll say like barrel aged or like...
Yeah,
for some of the like older, or like I feel like barrel aged and like hardy are generally like the descriptors
yes.
that you see associated with the longer aged misos.
And yeah, what's the difference in process?
The main difference in process is quantity of salt.
Okay.
With a lot of ferments, you use a lot more salt in the older misos, and you use less koji, which is the aspergillus inoculated rice, or in some cases barley, that you mix in to start the miso. And then you also use a seed miso in the older misos as part of the starter as well. With
okay.
the young ones, it's less salt and less time and more koji.
Okay. And where do you get your koji culture?
I buy it from Sunrise Market.
So you're using like the...
Yeah, it's a commercial koji. I get it because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
There are, from what I've heard, much higher quality kojis out there. And I've set the bar low for myself. It's just where I can get to really quickly when I'm motivated to make miso. And it's a dry koji.
Yeah, and it comes in like a plastic container. I've used it too. I mean, I've made amazaki and miso with that. So
miso is one of the things that like I keep meaning to make, and I just haven't because it always seemed intimidating. And then friends who make it are always like, "Oh, it's so easy!" And they're always like, "Just go to Sunrise and get the koji.
Yep.
It will be successful. Like, it's totally fine." So I know lots of people that make really great misos that are using that, and they come out fabulous. So,
yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to try. I know Gem Cultures has, you can mail order, and I would like to try those because they have super fresh cultures that are might go faster or whatever. But yeah, I think it's a great resource. And for those of you out here who don't have a wonderful Japanese market where you live, you can definitely mail order. So just
there's a lot of
Google
companies.
Koji, KOJI, and you'll be able to get it pretty easily. So I'm also doing bread. So I had a really nice sourdough culture going for a while that really went bad.
It happens.
Yeah, but in a super weird way. So it dried out.
Oh.
And it did have some black mold on top, but it smelled like super aged Parmesan cheese. I ditched it, but it had such a fascinating aroma. Anyway, but I started that again. So I'm using the pineapple juice culture.
You do the pineapple juice culture. Yeah. See, I just do the flour and water with, I'll toss in a few organic grapes just for the first few days and use those to start it, which I guess is riskier because the pineapple lowers the acidity, so you just get like the proper culture.
Well, you skip kind of, there's like a look, I think it's called Lacanostac bacteria that you kind of skip that with the pineapple culture, but
I've never had any problems just with the grapes, as long as, and you know, I just try to stay on top of feeding my culture, but I definitely forget for a couple days sometimes, and it's been okay.
Yeah, we just forgot for longer than that. But anyway, so I'm starting that, and then I'm also doing a raisin water culture.
Oh.
Which Peter Reinhardt, I first learned about with Peter Reinhardt's Bread Revolution. That's his most recent book. So you're basically putting raisins in water, filtered water, and it's working. There's definitely bubbling, so that should be ready. So I'm going to try to do maybe like two breads with that. And then for my workshop, I actually made two green market meads. So I made a beet mead. I got local honey or New York State honey, New York State beets and New York State apples. And I made a beet mead, short mead with star anise.
Okay.
And then I did an apple pie mead. So obviously the spices aren't from New York, but you know, but the beet mead is delicious. The apple meat, the apple pie short mead is still going, but
all right.
I'm really excited about those. Yeah.
I might drop in just for the samples. Yeah.
I'm glad you're back into beverages and not totally burned out after your book. So it's understandable why you maybe were not on top of your sourdough culture because you have been busy with, you know, that project.
Yeah. But I'm excited. And then I might actually do a super quick like kimchi or something else, like a really, you know, fast turnaround. I'm always intrigued by like the 2 or 3 day kimchis, which are pretty accessible.
Yeah, and you can get away with using a lot less salt, which appeals to a lot of people, and sort of get away with eating a ton more kimchi and not feeling overwhelmed by that salt.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And like a lot of the quicker ones, you can toss like some fruit in, like if you toss in some like pear chunks, like if you do like a really light one that's like not super spicy with like a lot of like cucumbers and pear, because the sugar in the fruits really like kicks the fermentation up, and so it goes super quick, and you just get like a really nice, mild, funky kimchi. I never would have thought to do it, and I had a Korean roommate who was kind of like one of the people who got me into making kimchi, and like that was something that she would just quickly make all the time, and I was like, oh yeah, fruit, totally, it works great.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for being on the program. I hope that some of you out there, if you're not in Brooklyn or New York City and you can't come to this festival, that you've been inspired. And please seek out a fermentation festival near you. I know there are several different fermentation festivals across the country. Portland, I believe, in Michigan. Anyway, so, I mean, these are great opportunities. There hopefully will be more popping up.
Start one. If there isn't one near you, you know.
Absolutely.
Organize one. If you want tips or anything, drop me a line and I'm happy to give advice.
And how could they get in touch with you?
You can reach me at my email, which is listed on ferment.wordpress.com, on the About the blog, you know, Why Another Food blog. You can find my email there. And the address again is ferment.wordpress.com.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to see you guys Sunday, and we'll be back with Kuzme next Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.